Before we get started with this episode, I just wanted to open with a quick apology. Welcome to the First Responders Second Thoughts podcast. Do you think the call ends when you hang up? Think again. This is where dispatchers speak the truth about the job, the calls, and the people who think 911 is a number to call when their fast food order is wrong. You'll hear real stories, unfiltered rants, mental health talk, and news headlines that show the good, the bad, and straight up what in the hell moments in this line of work. It's not always pretty, but it's always real, and so are we. I'm Alejandro, your host, and this is First Responders Second Thoughts. Good morning, everyone. I'm Alejandro, your host for the First Responders Second Thoughts podcast. It's Friday, August 8th, 2025. We made it to the end of the week, folks. Congratulations. Recording this podcast in the morning, kind of getting an early start on my Friday, which is my day off. I'm off Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays now, being on day shift. And, you know, I really, it's been nice being back, right? You know, it's having to, you know, see admin a lot more often during the day. Our break room is, you know, packed during lunchtime and everything else. But it's, you know, it's just things you get used to. But it's been really nice getting off at 6 p.m. and coming home and, you know, being with the wife and everything and having dinner, watch TV together, hanging out, then I go to bed. The only downside, like I said, is getting up at 4:30 in the morning. That part is rough. It really is. And it'll always be rough, I'm sure. So we'll see how that goes. We still have a long time to go in this bid. We'll see how everything works out. I mentioned apologizing right before the podcast started because I was notified that by one of my officers that they had listened to my podcast and we were in the break room and they asked something along the lines of, hey, did you see my comment? And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? What comment? And he's like, the little comment that I sent you. I'm like, well, where? He's like, I filled it in on your website. And I'm like, what? And for those of you who don't know, I do have a website. It's line9media.com. It's just kind of like the homepage for this podcast. And so I was like, what are you talking about? Well, I'll go look. Later on that day when I had gotten home, I went online to the form, the Google form that I had filled out, or the Google form that I had set up, and I saw there were pending comments. And I'm like, well, why didn't I get notifications of these? Because there was a little button to click that says email me whenever there's a new response posted. So some of these had been there since May, and I felt awful because I hadn't seen them. So I will respond to them today, and I'll read them on the air here in just a moment. But first, I'd like to rant for just a brief moment about training classes, and not that I have anything against training classes. I'm all for getting more education in this industry and bettering yourself. But I'm just talking about the overall layout of a training class. Most of the time, they're at, you know, 8 a.m., and not everyone is on the day shift, but I don't even want, that's a separate argument. I don't want to talk about that. Talking about going into class, you have the instructor up there. You've got, you know, 30 people in your class. The instructor says, hi, my name's so-and-so. I've got this many years in the industry. Here's all the acronyms after my name. Here's everything I've ever done. Here's the department I work for. And here's something a little bit about myself, a fun little fact. Now I want each one of you to stand up, give me your name, your agency, how long you've been doing this, and a fun little fact about yourself. Well, there goes an hour because you assume that everyone takes about a minute or two to talk about themselves, and then the instructor is probably going to chime in, or maybe someone else in the class is going to be like, hey, I do that too, blah, 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 and then there's going to be a side conversation. Before you know it, you're there an hour, and guess what? You're probably number 30 at the back of the class just waiting to take your turn so we can get this over with. What everyone needs to do is they need to download an app, and it's called Blink. Boy, Lincoln, Ida, Nora, Queen, Bravo, Lima, India, November, Quebec, B-L-I-N-Q. Blink. It is a widget that will sit on your phone. It has a QR code, and from there you can create two contact cards for free. Once you pay for the service, if you decide to, you don't have to, then you can, you know, make them different colors and put cool designs on them and have more cards, but I don't. I just use the free version because I only have two cards. I have one as a dispatcher and one as a mayor. That's it. That way, whenever you get to a class, the instructor can literally just put their QR code on the screen. Everyone can go in there and scan it and be like, oh, look, it's Alejandro Galvez. He works for this city. He's an EMD. He's an EMDQ. Here's his cell phone number. Here's his email address. His LinkedIn profile. Social media. Here's the city website. Okay, cool. This is how long he's been doing it. Great. Okay, we can get started for class. That's what it needs to be like. And be like, hey, everyone, I'm Alejandro Galvez. Here, I'm here to train you on blah, blah, blah. There's my Blink code up there if you want to know a bit about me, but let's get to work. That's what we need to do. And everyone else in the class needs to just download the app too. Why? Because it, like I said, it's free. And while you're there, when I break you for 10 to 15 minutes for, you know, just to have a break, everyone go scan your codes. Hey, you got a Blink? Yeah, cool. Let me scan it. Oh, cool. All right. Oh, wow. You do all this cool stuff. That's your networking time, right? And at the very beginning, I'm there to learn at that point. I really wish we would start embracing this piece of technology and start using it. In fact, the Blink I found from an instructor when I went to McAllen for that public safety conference in South Texas, she had one. And I'm like, what is this? So I scanned it and boom, there was all our information because we were in breakout rooms that were only about an hour long, right? For those trainings. She had it. And I'm like, wow, this is awesome. This is really cool. So I made a card for dispatch and a card for mayor. Boom. Anywhere I go now, here's my information. Scan this. And it pulls it up on their phone. It's very nice. And thank you so much for that because I am pushing that hard because it just saves so much time, especially if you're in a training class. Here's my code. Scan it. When I break us for a short break here in a minute, scan each other's codes, share that, whatever you want to do. The end. Let's move on. You can tell I'm very passionate about something like that. It's just so much time is wasted in training class just trying to socialize in the first hour. Some people don't want to be there. Some people do. Not everyone wants to talk about themselves. Okay. This is not elementary school or junior high or high school, right? Let's just get to work. And if people want to socialize, they can be like, hey, you got a Blink? Can I scan it? Cool. The end. Let's move on. So, as you can tell, I have the comments here, and I'll go over these right now. And I've also posted a question to the Reddit 911 dispatcher community and received some responses there, so I'll go over those. But once again, the website is line9media.com. You can spell out the word 9, or you can put the number 9 there. Both of them work and will redirect to that same website. The Google form is there at the bottom. You can fill out if you want to send a user submission there. And it's just kind of a little bit about the podcast and where it's hosted and so forth. It's just one page. So nothing fancy, but you can fill out the form there. And I have the notifications turned on, so it will notify me via email if I receive a user submission. So let me get started with the first comment. It says, I heard you started a podcast and decided to give it a listen to. It's really good and provides a better understanding to the lives of dispatchers. I really hope more officers at the agency would give it a listen to. I know that there are only a few officers, and I mean only a few, who can do what you all do on a day-to-day basis, despite what they believe. I worked dispatch in my other agency for a day or two here and there, and like you said in the early episode, you can only hear what's going on and your mind fills in the rest, especially when you don't hear back from an officer who last keyed up with a yell and no response after. At least with us officers, we arrive on scene and see everything is okay and get that closure about the call quicker while you sit in the unknown. I tell officers all the time it's just as stressful, if not more so, to work dispatch. The officers who get frustrated with dispatch have obviously never worked a single day in there. I really enjoyed episode 4 when you talked about the culture and how it's caught and not taught. I never heard that expression, but it's so true. Keep doing what you're doing, and I look forward to future episodes. Well, I really appreciate that. That's one of my patrol supervisors that I work with. They're right. There are a few officers that I have worked with that have worked dispatch before, too, so they have some understanding of it. A lot of them tend to forget what it was like behind the headset, though. Once they get on the street, that training kind of gets overridden, and they completely forgot what we're doing in there and why some questions and some information is slow to come to them on the radio because we're trying to get it out of the collar. But there are a few in there who understand what we do and don't forget. And he's one of them. So I really appreciate that. And it's true. And it is a lot harder for us when we hear something on the radio and we can't visually see what's going on. And then a lot of the times we don't have a resolution of the call. You all do in the street. That's why a lot of the times when we ask you, hey, what happened here? It's not us pestering you, trying to be nosy, but sometimes it's a tough call. And we kind of want closure on that. So we know, hey, did we do our best? What did we do here? You know, we want to know how it ended up. The other day I had a call, a medical call that came in, and the gentleman was clearly having some kind of stroke. And there was a YouTube video of a news reporter who was trying to give a report on the air, and she was saying her words all in a jumble. They were all backwards and everything. Something was obviously wrong. Turned out for her, though, that wasn't a stroke. It was a really bad migraine. I've never had one before, but I'm like, holy crap, a migraine can make you do that? But it can. In this case, the caller told me he believed he was having a stroke, and that was pretty much all I got from him, because anything else at that point, his words were out of order. Just trying to get his vehicle description. Thankfully, he called 911 on the cell phone. I knew where he was calling from. He was able to get the grocery store name out. Good. We got him the help he needed, but it was clearly evident he was having a stroke. So I'm going through the EMD protocols. I'm like, no, this is clear evidence of it. Like he can't even speak to me. And I could tell he was getting frustrated because he was trying to tell me what he was wanting to say, but he couldn't. I'm just like, sir, I got you. Don't worry about it. He wanted us to call his wife. I said, don't worry, buddy. We'll call her. We'll let her know what's going on. Try to be calm because I know, you know, you can't speak. So try not to say anything else unless it's something you really have to say. We got all the information out there. I stayed on the phone with them until they got there. They took care of them. And so I didn't know what happened after that, because we made contact with the spouse. We told her what was going on and everything else. She was real grateful for it. But I don't know what happened after that. So that's something I'm asking to look into. But we only know so much on the fire EMS side. I was able to ask my chief what was going on with this one. And yes, it was clearly a stroke. I mean, they went code 3 to the hospital. It was clearly a stroke. We coded it correctly. We got him out there quickly. And I hope he's doing better now. You know, something like that, where there's no police involvement, we only have a resolution up to that point when they transport, right? On the police side of things, there's follow-ups, and they can kind of see calls to the end, depending on what it is. So there's a little bit more information on the police side, but on the fire side, it's a little bit different. But that's something like that. Yeah, we want to know how it turns out, especially with him, because I knew he was having a tough time. I could tell he was stressed because he wanted to tell me what was going on, but he physically could not. So it is often harder for us on that end because we don't know how some things turn out. And sometimes we never know, but sometimes we do know. And the next comment I have is from Corinne. And they gave me permission to read this on the podcast. And they are a dispatcher and they're sharing a call they can't forget. So let's dive into it. She said, I would like to begin by saying I've gone to therapy because of this call. Recently, our center, short-staffed as always, had a call out and I was first on the list to fill the void. So I go into work on my day off. The shift goes well for 11 of the 12 hours I'm supposed to be there. However, in the final hour, I answer the phone and am greeted with, he's been shot. Our county is relatively small, 40,000 residents, and gun violence is not commonplace. Of course, we have had training, but this was real. My caller refused CPR, head tilt breathing instructions, and bleeding control instructions. The shooter ran off and barricaded himself in his house. We send every unit possible, and I hear EMS call for the med flight crew to bring extra blood. Shortly thereafter, the med flight was called off, and they pronounced the victim dead. Calls began flooding in about who the victim was, who the shooter was, and where the latter had gone. In the midst of all of this, shift change had begun. I stayed over and worked 2 additional hours and only went home after my supervisor told me to leave. I replayed the call over and over in my head. I kept thinking about whether I could do more. I asked my training officer, supervisor, and superiors to listen to the call for the reassurance that I did everything in my power to ensure a positive outcome. And they all came to the same conclusion. I did the best I could with what I was given. Though it still eats at me, I follow the criminal case related to the shooting because I will never forgive the shooter for what he did to me, and more importantly, to the victim's family. You know, I thought about how to address this comment and this story here, but I think I'm going to start at the end and work my way backwards. So, first of all, Corinne, I'm proud of you for following the criminal case. And I'm really proud of you for mentioning here, I will never forgive the shooter for what he did to me, and more importantly, the victim's family. And that goes without saying. But the key phrase is, I will never forgive the shooter for what he did to me. And you're absolutely right. We're not dismissing what he did to the victim's family, but we're acknowledging what he did to you. He started a chain of events that traumatized the victim's family, traumatized his family, traumatized all the first responders who came to the scene, and traumatized you, a first responder who answered the call. You are absolutely right to point that out. I appreciate you pointing that out, and it really made me think when I saw that one line, I will never forgive the shooter for what he did to me, because he absolutely did traumatize you, 100%. I think many people who are not in this line of work don't realize that, yes, many of the calls we get are routine, but every once in a while, we get a critical incident like this, and it does a number on everyone involved. And we also, unfortunately, hear the dark sides of humanity and how horrible humans can be to one another. And that sticks with us for a long time. You talked about you asked your training officer, supervisor, and superiors to listen to the call for reassurance that you did everything in your power to ensure a positive outcome. And they all came to the same conclusion. You did the best you could with what you were given. And they're absolutely right. I'll tell you here, yes, you did. As far as the citizen earlier who wouldn't do CPR, breathing instructions, or bleeding control, unfortunately, there are citizens out there, they're either too scared or even too apathetic to want to be involved. And yes, even though we're on the other end of the line, we know that if we were there on the scene, we would be doing it, but we can only control within our span of control, and we can't force a caller to do it, even though as much as we'd want to. And in this case, they didn't help. And that may have contributed to the loss of life because they refused to help. That's a decision that they will have to live with for the rest of their lives. And at some point, they'll be called to account for it, for why they made that choice. You did everything you could with what you had. So I'm proud of you. As far as following the case, I totally agree. Keep with it. Write me back. Let me know what happens. If the trial is open to the public, go to the court. Sit in the audience. Watch the case unfold and keep up with it. If that gives you a sense of closure and control, by all means, 100% do it. And finally, I want to commend you for going to therapy. I wasn't always like that. You know, when I was brought up, going to therapy and talking to people was kind of like a sign of weakness in this line of work. And over the past few years, I have completely reversed my position on that, especially as I have struggled with catastrophizing in the last year or so. I've never been stronger in my vocal support for mental health, for our line of work, and reaching out to those mental health resources and talking to someone. So I'm glad you are speaking to someone, and keep with it. It's good for you, right? Everyone needs someone to talk to, and I'm proud of you for doing that. So overall, Corinne, thank you for writing in. Please keep me updated. I did write you back. I hope you got it, but please keep me updated on this story. I want to know what happens, and I'd like to update the listeners in a future episode of what happened. So keep with it. I hope you're doing well. Take care of yourself, and hopefully we'll talk again soon. So now we move to the main kind of topic for this podcast, and it was a question I posed to the 911 dispatcher community. And the question was, dispatchers, how has dispatch changed your life outside of work? The job can take a toll in ways most people never see. Share what it cost or taught you. So that's what I asked the community, and the responses I got were actually pretty insightful. So let's go over those. All right, this person responded and said almost 10 years total dispatching, a few things stuck out to them. Number one, they hate talking on the phone after work. Don't call me, just text me for the love of God. 100% agree, I don't like talking on the phone either. I prefer texting if possible, and that's just how I've always been. I just prefer it. Even with my staff as mayor, I prefer to text them. Very rarely will I have to make a phone call unless I'm getting legal advice or I have to write a long message out. It's like, forget it, I'll call them. But otherwise, just text me, period, please. Number two, they said, I always pay attention to where I am, mile markers, cross streets, etc. I mean, that's a great idea. That's very sound advice. Whether you're a dispatcher or not, anyone should be knowing where they are at all times. And I bet people nowadays don't even know what a mile marker is. They're there. They're on the highway. Use them. They're for landmark purposes to let you know where you are. Number three, my ability to be in crowded situations has diminished. I don't trust people, but that may be because of media attention towards things like terrorism or active killer events. I can understand that. Large crowds still don't bother me. You know, I used to go to a board game convention where there's, you know, 2,000-3,000 people there, and that's never bothered me. It's about knowing where all the exits are, though, if something like that did happen. Number four, I don't like beating around the bush with conversations. Please get to the point of what you need to tell me. I absolutely agree, and I think this is probably common for a lot of us. Just get to the point. And unfortunately, this has bled into, you know, time with my wife. She'll tell me a story about some things, and I'm just like, babe, please just tell me what happened. Like, what happened? So there's a balance there. She's the second oldest out of four sisters. I'm an only child, right? So they're, you know, they like to chit chat a lot where I don't talk very much. So like, just what you need to say, just get to the point, please, and just tell me. So I have to watch myself though, because I want to be rude to her, but she can kind of read my body language when I'm ready for her to get to the point of the story of what happened. Number five, I people watch. More specifically, I'm watching body language, hand movement, etc. It goes to the back to the lack of trusting people in society. I agree. I agree with that too. My wife and I went out to eat yesterday, and I was constantly watching the people that were walking in, that were walking out, that were sitting next to us, that were walking by us. Like, it's being in a constant state of hyper awareness, and it can be exhausting sometimes. And, you know, I'm also paying attention to my wife, listening to her. We're talking, enjoying our time together. So yeah, I hope she understands when she listens to this, because I know she does, but I hope she understands the constant things that are going in my brain constantly and why sometimes I'm just exhausted, because it's just a constant state of awareness that I have no matter where we are. Because I don't know if she's aware enough of what's going on around her. So I feel like sometimes I have to be aware for both of us. And so that makes me just crank it up another level of being just hyper aware. Number seven, listen to my body for symptoms. The emergency medical dispatcher in me has learned, don't dismiss symptoms and risk regretting it later on. Take care of your body. That's true. Absolutely. If you have sick time, use it. That's what it's for. Go get checked out. If your cities or counties or whatever you work in, they offer wellness plans, they offer physicals, take them. We have a company that comes in. They're called Frontline Mobile Health. This is the second year they've been doing it for civilians. They originally offered for officers and detectives. one of our assistant chiefs at the time was, they found they had something going on. One of our detectives had something going on, and they became very strong proponents of pushing that off to civilians as well. And a lot of us have taken advantage of it. It's great getting that physical every year and then going to my doctor with the results, and then we go address whatever we need to address. So take care of your body. Absolutely. Number 8, work-life balance is key. Yes, there are mandatory overtime moments, but work is not your life. That's true. Work is not my life. My wife, my family is my life. That's who I'm working for, to provide for them. So there is a balance that has to be involved. And unfortunately, sometimes those scales can get tilted one way or the other. But you have to try to find the balance. Number 9, leave work at work. I make it a point to have some internal signal to know when my work is done at the end of the shift. For me, it's a mix of once I'm out the doors, 911 stays within those walls. I agree with that. I don't really tell my wife about what goes on at work, simply because she is my, like I said before, she's my refuge, right? She's my safe space. So unless it's something really, really bad, I try not to tell her anything, because I want her to be the person I can go to when I can honestly just shut off and not worry about work. That's why I don't really involve her in what we do, because I want her to remain that my safe space where I can just turn off and just go lay down next to her and not worry about work. I do know, sometimes I will turn on the radio and listen to some music when I'm going to work or going home. That's my kind of signal for me to, hey, I'm transitioning from work to home or home to work. And number 10, ask for help. On the job or not, counseling, whether you've had a rough call or not. For example, I thought I managed my first ever completed suicide call well and moved past it. But this summer, I took an eerily similar call nearly 7 years after the fact. I recognized how my body reacted and addressed that. Absolutely. As I've said before, I'm a strong supporter of therapy. Speaking with someone, getting the help you need, there are more mental health resources available to us now than there were when I was starting this job 20 years ago. Have someone to talk to. Don't bottle it up. I'm a bottler sometimes, but don't bottle it up. Talk to someone. Talk it out. So another user said, it's made me hate people and just how stupid, helpless they are in today's society. Instead of Googling simple, easy to find information, let me tie up the 911 line while someone's loved one is now dying and in need of medical because I have a question and it's not an emergency, or because they can't parent and they felt calling 911 instead of not emergency was appropriate because their kid won't get out of bed to go to school. People suck. People are stupid, and technology made it worse. Well, they obviously hit on some things here. And it seems in this line of work that, yes, people are very helpless, but that's why they're calling us for help. As far as the stupid side, I do find it interesting, too, how we're in the information age and people just simply don't Google something to look up the information or use the resources they have. We have one of the most powerful pieces of technology in our hand. I think 9 out of every 10 Americans has a cell phone, so use it. It never fails to amaze me how many times we get people who call 911 and say, I have a non-emergency. Okay, well, why didn't you call the non-emergency line? Well, I don't know the number. Okay, well, why didn't you look it up? Was the issue so pressing that you couldn't spend 10 seconds to Google the non-emergency number for your police department and then call it there? I don't think many people realize, but we are limited on 911 lines that we have in our center. 911 lines are not infinite. There are only so many that are allocated to each agency. So when you call 911, you're tying up a line if it's not an emergency. That's why sometimes I'll ask the caller, is this a life or death emergency? And if they say no, then I will go, here is the non-emergency number, and I'll send it to their phone. Give it a call. Yes, more than likely it'll be me answering the line, but you will leave that 911 line open. That way, if something comes in, I can put you on hold for a moment and go answer that. And if it's a medical emergency now, I can handle that and then get back to you. Another user commented, not a dispatcher, but an old boss of mine had the saying, 21 words or less. I loved it. She didn't have time to mess around, so our conversations were always to the point. It's kind of a great mantra to live by. Tell me what you need to say in 21 words or less. I like it. This dispatcher said 2 things. The split ear never turns off. If I'm in public, specifically in earshot of any conversations, my ears automatically tune in. That's 100% true. And I'm the same way. My wife and I will be at a restaurant and she'll be talking to me. And I'm listening to her with one ear. And in fact, I am listening to the rest of the conversations of the room. If someone's next to us, I'm listening in. It's not to be nosy. It's just literally the act of listening that we're trained to have, to hear everything in the room that we can. It's just part of the job. And it's not something you can switch off. At least I haven't found a way to switch it off. It's just how it's always been. And they also said, I cannot watch any shows with dispatching aspects in them without criticizing the call taking. that's where the public, I think, gets its misconceptions from about our profession. Like the shows, 911, the movie, I think it was called The Call with Halle Berry, things like that. I mean, those are not close to what we do. I think the show rescued 911 with Captain Kirk, William Shatner, because it gave the public a good look at what we actually do and what happens with calls. Here's another one. They said, I hate people. I hate being out in large crowds. I hate being on the freeway, and I hate slow talkers. I do the same thing that you mentioned about the worst case scenario. I could be driving somewhere with my kids, and all of a sudden I think, what would happen if I get an 1199? What would I do first? And then I would play out this entire scene in my head as I start to slowly feel it physically. I get this ache in my chest, and I'll be on the verge of tears on a completely made-up thing. But I've always had weird, maybe sad thoughts like this since forever. Sometimes it's about work, and sometimes it's about what if my kid is driving and he drives over a bridge. And I play out the entire thing from getting the call to being at the funeral. Damn, what the hell is wrong with me? It's catastrophizing. It's exactly what it is. It's a trauma response to something. Mine didn't start till, you know, what, a year ago, a year and a half maybe, so it just started recently. But I equate it to because of this line of work. But no, I mean, I'm doing this podcast right now, I'm recording this, and I'm thinking to myself, well, what happens if I get a call that something happened to my parents? What if I got a call that they've been involved in a car accident and they didn't make it? You know, like, what are my next steps? Well, I have to leave. I have to go to the scene or go to the hospital and find out what happened. I have to call my grandfather, my mother's father, let him know what happened. I got to call my father's mother, my grandmother, let her know what happened. You know, I have to worry about the two dogs they have in the house. I have to worry about their finances. Did they leave, you know, end of life instructions for me if something happened to them? Because I've been hounding their butts to give me some kind of plan if something happens to them, what they want me to do with everything they have. And they haven't been doing it. You know what I mean? So it's just like, this is what I worry about. If something happens to them, what are their wishes? What am I supposed to do? I'm the only child of them. So like, what do you want me to do with your possessions? You know, what am I supposed to do? Well, everything, son, will go to you. Well, that doesn't tell me anything, mom. Like, what do you want me to do with the two of you? You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm already thinking about it now. It's just like, that's the things I think about. And it's constant. And it does not turn off sometimes when I'm alone and I'm just alone with my thoughts. If I keep myself busy, then it's okay. But things like that happen. And yes, it's a trauma response to something, always thinking of the worst case scenario, and it's worth talking to someone about. So this person gets it, and I'm sure the two of us could have a great conversation about it. And the best part is you actually heard me start going through the process right now, and then I realized as I was recording, I'm like, wait, I'm going into this, and I'm using it as an example, but I'm really starting to go into this with myself. See, that's what it's like. Now imagine that constantly. Whenever you're alone, whenever you're with your thoughts, it's just you. That's what happens. And it's sometimes it can drive me to tears because of it. Because obviously I don't want anything to happen to my parents. You know, I don't want anything to happen to my wife. I don't want anything to happen to anybody, right? But that's what happens. So you actually got a glimpse of me actually starting to go into that mode. And I had to stop at one point with a recording and be like, hey, hold on. Wait, we're literally just talking this as an example. We're not actually doing this right now, Alejandro. So there you go. This person provided me a list saying, I don't like talking after work. Let me be quiet. I'm a lot more vigilant about knowing where I am. People treat me differently. I don't let people walk all over me anymore. I'm a lot less sympathetic. If people aren't willing to help themselves, I won't let them reach out to me out of work. I always tell my family and friends I love them. I always have aspirin and antihistamines on me. I know where AEDs and bleed kits are near my home. I also make mental notes of them and when I'm out and about. And finally, I hardcore judge people who don't have W3W on their phone. Now, I will admit, I had to stop recording and look up what W3W was because I had never heard of it before. So today, I want to tell you about a tool that's starting to pop up more in the 911 industry, and it's something called What Three Words. And it's a global addressing system that splits the entire planet into tiny 10 by 10 foot squares. Each square gets a unique set of three random words. So instead of giving me a long set of GPS coordinates, you could just say something like Apple, carpet, train, and that tells me exactly where you are. So why does that matter for our industry? Well, think about the times you don't have an actual street address. Maybe you're hiking, maybe you're on a lake, you're on a back road, some back county road with no mile markers, you're in a brand new neighborhood that isn't even on Google Maps yet. With What Three Words, you can still pinpoint your exact spot. So some dispatch centers already use it. I can tell you we do not, and I'm pretty sure a lot of agencies in Dallas-Fort Worth do not use it either. But if a caller has the app or can go to the website, they can read out those three words and responders can find them without playing the describe what you see around you guessing game. It's not perfect. You need the app or you need internet access, and you have to say the words clearly so they're understood. But when it does work, it's quick, accurate, and can save precious minutes in an emergency. So if you like being outdoors, you travel a lot, it's worth downloading What Three Words. And in fact, It is finished downloading now on my phone. I'm gonna have my wife down on her download on hers, because you never know when you might need to tell somebody exactly where you are, right? Once again, the entire world is divided into 57 trillion 10 by 10 foot squares. They're randomly assigned too. So no, there's no geographical pattern to them. Banana guitar chair in Texas could be nowhere near banana guitar table in Canada, but it's simple for anyone to use. It's a free app or via the website, and it works offline once the map is downloaded. So what three words? So I really appreciate that comment. That's why I featured it here, because I was like, wow, that's really good. Everything else they said though, as far as I don't like talking after work, let me be quiet. Totally agree. I'm a vigilant about knowing where I am too. People treat me differently. Yeah, once they know what I do for a living, they do tend to treat me a little bit differently. And I'm glad you don't let people walk over you anymore. That's great. I'm glad you don't. And as far as the sympathy, yes, that can be a downside of this line of work. And we have to be careful, right? But people also have to help themselves. I totally agree with you on that. And telling your family and friends, I love them. Totally agree with you. You should never go to bed angry at anyone in your heart. You should never go to bed with anger in your heart, because we don't know what's going to happen. I tell my coworkers when I leave or when they're leaving, have a good life or be safe, because I don't know. I may not come back. They may not come back. And it sounds kind of like morbid. I don't want them to leave without me saying, be careful or take care. Or if the last thing you hear from me is telling them to have a good life, then those were my wishes for them before something happened to me. So I actually mean that when I say it. Aspirin and antihistamines on me. That's fantastic. I do the same thing. It's in my backpack. Knowing where your AEDs and bleed kits are near your home. AEDs, absolutely. Bleed kits, I honestly don't have any. I didn't think about that, but I may have to get some just in case, maybe keep a couple in my backpack. And that's fantastic. This comment is probably my favorite one, because all the stuff they talk about, I agree with, but the what three words thing, that was just amazing. And I'm glad I was able to showcase it here. So I'm going to message them privately and give them a link to this podcast so they can hear their comment on the air. Another comment sent to me was, I've been in dispatch for 11 years, made it up to an administrator role. Honestly, I just don't care about anything anymore. I don't like to talk to anyone. I don't want to make friends. I'm just blank. And when I'm at work, it feels like prison. So I hope that person reaches out and accesses some of the mental health resources that are out there. I'm concerned about that comment, not even because of the not caring anymore, not talking to anyone, making friends, but mainly for the part that says, I'm just blank. When someone says something like that, that tells me they're kind of like devoid of all just emotion, just everything. And that right there is a concerning word or phrase for me. And I do hope they reach out and get some help. And you know what? Maybe I'll reach out to them and check to see how they're doing. Because this was a couple of months ago when I posted this question. And I'm worried about them. This one was a good comment. They said, my sleep schedule has been weird for 25 years and I put on weight. Also, I missed a lot when my kid was young. That's about it, though. 99% of the time I can leave work stuff at work, so I don't let it weigh on me. Oh, I used to piss my wife off because she thought I was ignoring her when she was talking just because I was doing something at the same time. Like, I can listen to three separate radio channels at once. I can manage to listen and chop vegetables or watch TV and listen to her at the same time. That's spot on. It's true. And I hope my wife understands that too sometimes, that when she's speaking to me, like if we're in the kitchen, you know, I'm in the kitchen getting dinner ready, because I get home just a little bit before she does, about an hour. But if I'm getting things ready in the kitchen and she's talking to me and telling me about her day, I may be putting dishes away. I may be, you know, getting the food ready, cooking and things on the pan, but I'm not looking at her. I'm not making eye contact with her. First of all, we don't make eye contact in our job anyways, because people we're talking to are on the phone, right? And that's how it is kind of in my social life too, and just being out and about. When I'm talking to people, yes, I try to make eye contact with them, but if I'm looking away, I'm still listening to you. It's just how the line of work has bled over into my outside life and social situations, you know what I mean? So the same thing with her. I'm listening to her, but I'm also trying to verbally acknowledge her, be like, okay, all right, well, what happened then? Something to let her know that, yes, I am listening, but I can also, like, I agree. I can be doing multiple things at once and be listening to her at the same time. I mean, like you said, you nailed it. I can listen to three separate radio channels at once. I can manage to listen and chop vegetables or watch TV and listen to her at the same time. Totally agree. 100%. The next few comments are short, so I'll kind of rapid fire them. We'll go over them. This one said, I've done this career long enough to hang up on people for asking dumb questions and will hang up again if they call back upset. I don't like being that way, but this job, after so many years, has made me tired, miserable, and I hate people. Staffing and morale is so low, they won't fire anyone, so people get away with everything, honestly. That's a huge warning flag to that person, and I would say you're experiencing some serious burnout, and there's a lot of problems going on at the agency. I would suggest you get with your EAP program if you have one, talk to somebody, do what you can, maybe get yourself out of that situation, and maybe it's time to move on to a different department. take a break in between. Maybe this is something you don't want to do anymore, but definitely you need to step away if you can and do what you need to do to take care of yourself. This person said, it's made me more resilient. It's made it more difficult to be in a public place without tuning in to every conversation and sound I hear around me. It's made me want to keep my phone on silent pretty much all the time. I hear enough phones ringing at work. I don't want to hear them at home. Totally agree. I carry 3 cell phones. I have my personal phone, I have my city cell phone where I work, and I have my city cell phone where I'm the mayor. And yeah, it's tough keeping 3 cell phones on and hearing them go off. And yeah, it just makes me want to turn them all on silent as well. This person said, I couldn't continue in the career because of the paranoia I ended up giving me. When I lived alone, it never bothered me. But now that I have a family, I constantly worry about all the shitty things I heard happening to them. That's a true statement. I'm sorry the paranoia was a side effect of the line of work. And I'm sorry you couldn't continue in that career. I hope you found something that's more fulfilling and something more to your liking. I do. Because we have a shortage of dispatchers across the nation, and I hate to have lost you. Maybe you got into another dispatching job just somewhere else, but I hope you got help for that, and I hope you don't suffer from that anymore. This person said, I definitely have a thinner patience for nonsense, but I'm also kinder and more aware of people. We have so many people struggling, so many people who make bad decisions. I use my position to be a voice of reason. Beautiful. That's excellent. I'm glad. And we should be the voice of reason, and the voice of calm. It's too easy, and we're too quick to judge when people make bad decisions. And I've been guilty of it before many times. Many times I can be very judgmental. And we should be compassionate, reasonable, and empathetic when they make those decisions, because we don't have a crystal ball and we don't always know what decision is best. We just do the best with what we can. Someone has to be there to help us when we make the wrong call. This person said, I hate driving and being in the car, or my loved ones being in the cars. The amount of fatal wreck calls I've taken has altered my mindset with driving. I mean, like I told you, when I've mentioned catastrophizing before, I mean, that's something I've thought about before. Something happens to a loved one, getting into a car wreck. And with me, texting and driving is a really bad habit. I'm trying to stop. I honestly am, but it's bad. Like, I'm talking, like, I'll be driving down the highway to go to work, and I'm texting, and then I look back up, and I'm like, wait, how did I get to this exit already? That's how bad it is. So that means my eyes are off the road for a good chunk of time. It's bad. I'm trying to stop. I know it. Even if I just need to maybe just start throwing my phone in the back seat or something so I can't reach it. But yeah, I can totally understand this comment here. And I'll end this with a person, this comment that I really like, and it says, all I want is sleep. Yeah. What else can you say? It's true. All I want is sleep. On day shift now, I think I have a much better sleep schedule now being on the day shift. I know exactly when I need to go to bed, and I know when I get up. My quality of sleep is much better now because of it. But at the end of the day, yeah, we just want to be able to sleep. And I cannot function on anything less than like 5.5 hours. If it's like 4 hours, 3 hours, I cannot function for that day. I mean, I obviously will, but I'm talking about, I have no motivation to do anything. I'm just doing the bare minimum to get by. So yes, at the end of the day, all we want to do is sleep. And before we end this episode, I want to introduce a new segment to the podcast called Quick Keys. And basically, it's going to be a recurring segment on the podcast where we take one specific topic about dispatching. It could be anything from how we work, how we sound, or how we're perceived in the public, and break it down into focused, actionable training, like a little quick training module. So think of it like a short, high-impact shift briefing you can listen to at any time. And the goal is to give us a practical takeaway we can use on our very next call. So today, we're talking about two slang terms that show up far too often in our world. Wife beater and baby daddy. On the surface, they may seem harmless, but in the context of dispatching, they're loaded with stereotypes, they're unprofessional, and they can cause serious problems in both public perception and legal proceedings. So let's start with wife beater. It's often used to describe a white tank top, but think about that. It directly connects an article of clothing to domestic violence. And that's not just slang. It's harmful and dismissive. So imagine a domestic violence victim requesting their call notes under open records and seeing that term in their own report. What message does that send to them? Our job is to document facts, not to perpetuate harmful language. Instead, we need to use accurate, neutral descriptions like white sleeveless undershirt or white tank top, because that's what it is. It's a white tank top. If a caller says he's wearing a wife beater, your call sheet better read male wearing a white sleeveless undershirt or male wearing a white tank top, because that keeps the description factual and free of bias. Now let's talk about baby daddy. This term is slang for the father of someone's child, especially when the parents aren't together. While a caller may use it, repeating it in the call card or on the radio introduces stereotypes and a casual tone into an official record. And yes, audio recordings of our radio transmissions are open record. So for example, if someone says my baby daddy is outside yelling, your notes better say caller states the father of her child is outside yelling. And here's why both of these examples matter. Everything we type into that call card is part of the public record. Open record laws mean anyone can request it. Victims, suspects, attorneys, reporters, and advocacy groups. Your notes could be read aloud in court, displayed in the media, or scrutinized by the jury. And I have read cases where a single slang in the CAD entry sheet became the talking point for a defense attorney used to argue that the department was already biased or dismissive before making the scene. And in the courtroom, credibility is everything, folks. Whether your call sheet is displayed, the jury sees your exact words. And if they include slang like wife beater or baby daddy, it can literally shift the focus away from the facts and onto your professionalism or lack of it. Victims reading your words may feel disrespected, and the public may question whether we even take calls seriously. So replacing slang with clear, factual terms protects the victim, the case, and your professional reputation, and it's a small change that's going to make a big impact, I promise you. Supervisors should be talking about this in shift briefings. Trainers should be addressing it with new hires from day one, and every dispatcher should hold themselves and each other accountable. Your words are your reputation. They last long after the call is over, and make sure they stand up to the scrutiny of open records and court proceedings. Stay sharp, stay respectful, be better, and keep setting the bar high for our profession. Well, folks, that's all I have. As I've told you before, whenever you hear the intro to this podcast, that it's not always pretty, but it's always real. I hope that by listening to some members of the 911 dispatcher community, you know that what we experience is real, and we are human beings just like everyone else. So, looking forward to another episode. I honestly don't know what I'm going to record yet. If you have ideas, please submit them to line9media.com. Once again, the website is line9media.com. You can also email me at line9media@gmail.com. I am on LinkedIn. I could probably go on a whole rant about LinkedIn at some point. Maybe I will. I still have that open records request pending at Twinsburg, Ohio about that 911 call. I have not received a response on that yet. So I'll do a follow-up here and see where we go from there. But once again, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it. Feel free to share this podcast. And by all means, email me. Reach out. What would you like to see me cover next? I have some ideas going, but hey, I always like to listen to y'all and see what we can get out there. So until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. The First Responder Second Thoughts podcast shares real calls, personal opinions, and professional experience from the world of dispatching. The views expressed here are my own and do not reflect the official policies or positions of my employer, the municipality where I serve as mayor, or any other agency. This podcast is for training and discussion purposes only. It is not legal advice.